Hey, everybody, this is Brad Williams, and I am the pastor of B4 Church. Welcome to our podcast. My prayer is that this would help you behold God, that you would see him for who he is, that you would belong to community, that you would be everything that you were created to be, and that you would be able to dream beyond the limitations in your life. So I hope you enjoy this teaching, and we look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Hey, everyone, welcome to the B4 podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Ashley.
And hey, today we have the pleasure of sharing an episode of an interview that we had with someone named Kara Powell.
Yes, we were really excited to talk to her. She was here for a parent Q&R.
Yeah.
You actually got to introduce her at the parent Q&R. So why don't you tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah. Kara Powell is an amazing woman. She's a mom, a leader, a researcher. Her research is really about the faith formation of adolescents into young adulthoods. She has a strong belief that a faith-filled teenager and young adult can change our world. Mm-hmm. But connected to that belief is another one, which is only so if leaders and parents get the best answers to their toughest questions about their life and faith. And so this conversation or series of conversations we're about to have with Kara is largely about what does it look like for us as leaders, as parents, to walk alongside of our young people in the formation of their faith and help them see themselves as God's agent of change in the world.
Yeah. And I would note too, as somebody who's not yet a parent, and as for you, somebody who's not yet a parent of teenagers, we actually found what she had to say super helpful, even though that isn't our stage of life.
That's right.
We're not just talking about parenting. We're talking about in general, how the church can support young people. So we hope you'll enjoy this conversation.
Well, hey, Kara, it's really nice to have you here today.
Oh, it's so fun to be here. I was just saying how much I love this facility here at this church.
Thank you. It just seems
so beautiful and well done. And so it's an honor to be here.
Well, the weather's always like this. It's a beautiful, sunny day.
Yes,
you know?
Well, that's what Portland is known for.
Of course.
Sunny weather. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah, we've had quite the reputation in Portland over the last year. But sunny is, it's definitely always
this
sunny.
This year we were very hot, too.
Yeah.
But so we're glad
I heard that this summer.
Yeah. A little bit of a reprieve.
Yeah, we say that from someone who's coming from the land of the sun.
Yeah. You ain't seen heat until you've been in Southern California for a summer. But I love it there. So
well, we're excited to have you here.
Thank you.
We are talking a lot about you and your story and the things that you have been researching and studying and sharing with the world. And so this is a recording that's happening right before an event that we're about to do here called a parent Q&R on mental health and faith formation. And we wanted to take some time just to pick your brain a little bit about your experience, the things that you are sharing with the world as well. But before we get into that, we just want to hear a little bit about you.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to share a little bit about myself. I guess I'll start with my vocation.
Yeah.
So I'm at Fuller Seminary. I'm a faculty member, and I'm also the chief of leadership formation at Fuller and the executive director of the Fuller Youth Institute. So I wear basically three hats at Fuller. Yeah. But that does not keep me on my toes as much as my parenting keeps me on my toes. So my job at Fuller is decently complicated, but it's easier than parenting.
Yeah.
And so Dave and I, my husband and I, we have two college students, a junior and a freshman, and then we have a 10th grader in high school. So we're down to just having one at home, which feels, we miss our big kids, but it's kind of the simplicity of only having one at home is kind of a refreshing break.
So, sons, daughters, what's
Oldest is a son and then two daughters. And we're very involved in our church, like Avenue Church. In fact, the 10th grade girls small group will be at our house tonight. My husband will be hosting it with the team there, and it's there every Sunday night.
And, and Lake Avenue is in Pasadena,
About a half mile from Fuller.
Okay,
so
very cool.
Curious because you're somebody that writes on parenting, does research on teens and young adults. Has that been extremely helpful in your journey as a parent, or does that sometimes actually get in the way and make things more complicated?
Yes, is the answer to that. So honestly, it's mostly helpful. I am so grateful for all that God's helped me learn through our research at the Fuller Youth Institute. I think when it's not helpful, is when I compare the worst of what I know about my own parenting with the best of what we study in, you know, exemplar parents who've been nominated.
Right. These are the all-stars.
Exactly. Yeah, like I remember one day I did like four interviews in a row with these amazing parents and I just walked out of my office and I thought, I stink as a parent. So that's the hard thing is I love all the research, but it also does show me areas that I and we can keep growing in. So
what was the inspiration to dive into the work you're doing with Fuller in the first place?
Well, it was actually Fuller's idea.
Okay.
And they came to me because our president at the time, President Rich Mao, was very personally impacted by Columbine and felt like as much good as Fuller Seminary does, you generally need to be a student enrolled in class in order to really benefit from the research on young people.
Yeah.
And so the vision was, could we develop a research center that really listens to the needs of families, churches, and ministries, does research based on those needs, and then translates the research into practical findings? So, you know, it takes PhD level research and turns it into a much more accessible tool that any leader or parent could use. So it was, that vision was immediately compelling to me. Yeah. I've been a youth pastor for a long time. I got my PhD in practical theology, so I had this bias toward how could we take the things of God and make them as practical as possible.
Yeah.
And so this job at Fuller, and now it's expanded to work with other centers at Fuller, has really been a privilege and a joy.
Yeah,
so,
that's amazing.
I love practical theology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the world we should all swim in.
Yeah.
Right? What part of your experience pastoring people really like gave you insight in the sort of angle that you needed to take in sort of practical theology?
Yeah. Well, I think this is where working with young people is so refreshing because they don't tolerate irrelevance. If you're in a group, whether it's three kids, you know, for a Coke, or whether it's 33 kids or 103 kids doing a talk, and if what you're saying is not connecting to their life, then they'll let you know it, you know, by their body language and sometimes by their verbal language. And so you know, I feel like in my 30 plus years of youth ministry, I've been trying to ask, how do we capture the imagination of young people with the things of God? And so this is really an extrapolation of that vision. How do we take the things of faith formation, which can be complicated, and turn them into a simple, feasible pattern and practices for leaders and parents who are working with young people and really want to love and serve them well. So I think I probably already had a practical bent.
Sure. Yeah.
But being in youth ministry just made me even more practical.
Yeah.
You can't get more practical than trying to get teenagers to listen and do stuff.
Totally. It's like the best communication training ever.
Well, and that's what I really appreciated about your newest book, which Alex and I read when we found out we were going to be interviewing you, is not only do you have like the research in the book, but you also provide really practical questions that parents or youth leaders or grandparents or whoever can actually ask. I'd love to give you an opportunity just to share a little bit about the book, what it's about, what you love about it, why people should read it.
Oh, I'm happy to. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
So the book is called Three Big Questions That Change Every Teenager. And it's based on research we've done, over 2,000 surveys and focus groups we've conducted with young people, as well as some really in-depth interviews with teenagers nationwide. And it was motivated because we really wanted to make sure that churches, families, and ministries were addressing the questions that kids had.
Yeah, that was one of the things I appreciated about the book is you said a lot of times churches are answering questions that young people aren't actually even asking.
And it was a 15-year-old who first said that to me in a very pointed way. He said, I wish the church would stop answering questions I'm not asking.
Wow.
Yeah, and I wish, I mean, let's fill in some other nouns there. I wish my family, I wish my parents, my step-parents, my grandparents.
I wish the world saw me is another way of saying that, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
So we listened to young people quite a bit, and what we came to conclude is beneath young people's questions about technology and gender identity and, you know, what they should do on Friday night and where they're going to go to college and whatever it might be, beneath those questions are these three big questions. And those three big questions are identity, who am I? Belonging, where do I fit? And purpose, what difference do I make? So we think every person including all of us chatting here today. We are wrestling with identity, belonging, sure. and purpose.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But for those of us over 30, they're more at a low simmer. Mm-hmm. For teenagers and young adults, they're at a pretty rolling boil. They're just wow. very pressing, prevalent questions. And so what the book is designed to do is give adults an understanding of those questions. Mm-hmm. And then over 300 questions that you can ask.
Yes.
Of a young person, not all in one sitting, mind you.
I'm
not recommending that. Just super clear. But just a few questions at a time
sure.
that you can ask a young person just to go a little bit deeper in yeah. conversation with them.
Get a little bit past that. How was your day today? Oh, it was fine.
Yeah.
End of conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So like just, it's Sunday today that we're recording this.
Yeah.
And on Friday morning, I got to take my daughter to school, our 10th grader,
yeah.
before I hopped on a plane to fly up here. And I could tell she was kind of in a mood to chat. It's not always the case with teenagers, as your listeners, I'm sure know. You really got to kind of give a gentle tug and see mm-hmm. if that young person's ready to talk. And I could tell she was. And so somehow I brought up this question that I actually love asking young people. If you could ask God any question, what would it be?
That's a good one.
If you could ask God any question, what would it be? And she kind of didn't answer very much. And so I thought, okay, I'm gonna tell her what her brother has said in the past
okay.
as a way to kind of facilitate
yeah.
conversation.
Climb the pump a little.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I told her, well, you know, once I asked Nathan and he said this, and that made her more open. And so she said, you know, I think if I was to ask God any question, I would look at the 30 greatest atrocities in world history and ask God, why did you allow them?
What an amazing question.
I know. Yeah. I have a PhD yeah. in practical theology
right.
and I can't answer that.
Right.
And so I said, oh, Jessica, that is such a good question.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked a little bit about suffering
yeah.
and a verse that means a lot to me is Romans 5, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
That suffering leads to perseverance, mm-hmm. perseverance, character, and character, hope. And I both love and hate that verse.
Right.
Like I love it,
right.
but I want people to that I care about and all people to grow in character and hope without
suffering.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yet often suffering is part of God's tool. So,
totally.
You know, that's not a full and complete answer to the question mm-hmm. of why God mm-hmm. allows suffering, but that was the element that seemed like it would connect with Jessica
yeah.
and Carr. So, I mean, we just want parents, grandparents, mentors, small group leaders, to be able to have those kinds of conversations, mm-hmm. to throw
sure.
out the question. And if your kid is open to something, then go a little bit further and say, tell me more, and mm-hmm. just keep going in the conversation.
Your story, I have a question asker.
Yeah.
She's
great.
She's almost seven.
Okay.
And she's—
Oh, just wait until she hits middle school.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
going to have even
yeah.
more.
I have four daughters
yeah.
and my two oldest ones are complete opposites,
mm.
but my oldest is a question asker and mm. a total thinker. And I will be honest with you, when she asks me questions like that, I have a hard time not teaching her the answer.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
right?
yeah,
and,
totally.
And you have a degree in practical theology,
yeah.
and your daughter's asking you a theological question.
Right.
And I can just hear a lot of the parents that I work with telling me, yeah, but I gave them an answer and they didn't like it.
Yeah.
What's the secret sauce in how you like engage
yeah.
with these questions
yeah.
that doesn't come across like you're dictating to them,
yep.
but— pulling more out of them, leaving them more curious, maybe.
Yeah. It, you know, it is tempting to come in with unanswered the answer.
Maybe it's just me, but
your 4-point
yes,
answer
yes.
with a PowerPoint slide.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
it's tempting to come into that. And I think this is where we just have to keep in mind the goal is a good conversation
yeah.
and the furthering of the relationship.
Mm,
the goal, the immediate
so
goal
important.
Is not
yep.
necessarily to convince that right. young person.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, they'll
yeah.
they'll be open to hear what you have to say. But the goal is a conversation.
Yeah.
I will say, sometimes when I have been more directive with one of my kids, whether it's about something related to doctrine or something Dave and I, my
sure.
husband and I see in their life, and we have been a little bit more lectury
uh-huh.
than conversation, I've learned it really helps if I'm sharing something, if I then follow up with two questions. Again, questions,
sure.
right? That's
mm-hmm.
like the theme here.
Sure.
The first is, what do you disagree with in what I've just said?
It's a brave question.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm normally like a start with the positive. Like,
yes.
you
sure,
know,
if
we were to debrief this podcast yeah. afterwards, I would definitely start with, well,
yeah.
well, you
yeah.
know, that's
yes.
how I
yeah.
always start every conversation.
Sure.
But when it's a young person and you as an adult give them a chance to critique you, Mm-hmm. Oh, they will take that chance. So, right. So starting with what do you disagree with and what I just said, mm-hmm. and letting them critique you. And again, not responding, not being defensive, just, mm-hmm. wow, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah, I could see how you would think that. Mm-hmm. But then the second question is, what do you agree with in mm-hmm. what I've just said? And at least my experience with young people, especially our own three kids, is if you give them a chance to critique first,
yeah.
then they're a whole lot more open to saying, but you know, you might be right. About
that's
fill in the blank.
Yeah.
So it's counterintuitive for me, but I feel like it helps have a better conversation mm-hmm. if I let them start by yeah. critiquing me. But I mean, I love asking my kids, like, what would you change yeah. about my parenting?
also a dangerous question.
Also a dangerous question. Yeah. And you have to be ready to not respond yeah. defensively.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, one of our kids, you talk about different yeah. personalities. Yeah. One of our kids would be like, nothing, Mom. You're doing great. Yeah. And another one of our kids would be like, well, I've got an alphabetized
yeah.
list
yeah.
of things from the last 24 hours yeah. that I wish you would do differently.
Wow.
So, you know, I need to be open either
sure.
way.
And
sure. so, you know, like the one who has the alphabetized list, that child has told me before that they actually want me to ask fewer questions.
Interesting. Mm. Okay.
Because I tend to ask so many questions.
Sure, sure.
And so I've tried to honor that and yeah. not pepper that child with quite as many questions yeah. as I do the other two.
Sure.
Because that child's
that's
told what, me
yeah.
that they would prefer I not.
That's so, part of listening. Sure. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Like if I ask you how I should do something differently and then yeah. I don't change.
Yeah.
Then the young person doesn't feel that's listened to. So those are just some of the questions that that we like
so
to ask.
So outside of the realm of parenting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if I were a manager at a restaurant down the road, but my employees were younger than me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm a youth worker and I'm working with some of the, like, how do these principles apply outside of the realm of parenting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I think they're pretty similar, actually. Yeah. And this is where I think, you know, millennials get quite a bad rap when it comes to who they are
sure.
With employment.
As two millennials, yeah. we'll agree with that.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I think, you know, we tend to judge millennials mm. and Gen Z more than journey with them. Mm. But I think there's similar truth there. Like, let that 27-year-old, that 33-year-old mm. speak into mm. what you could and should be doing differently in your mm. company because they have incredible insights. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you might be doing things that are a little bit dated, but then also invite them to affirm. And, you know, we do this. We yeah. have, I'm the second oldest person on our team of mm-hmm. about 25 people at the Full yeah. Youth Institute. And so we have a bunch of 20-somethings
yeah.
and they have a lot of ideas of things that we mm-hmm. should do differently. And mm-hmm. some of what they want us to do differently actually isn't that feasible.
but that's some, okay too.
Right, exactly. But yeah. some of it
but they
is.
They communicated it.
Yeah, but some of it is yeah. feasible.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're really trying to listen. And then actually one of our goals for 2022, we're working on our goals for 2022, is not only that we listen internally to our team, but then we loop back to them and let them mm-hmm. know how we've changed because of their feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's we've realized at the Full Youth Institute, again, with 20-somethings and 30-somethings who have a lot of great ideas, mm-hmm. they'll give feedback, we'll make change, and it might not always be obvious to
yeah.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to loop back to them and said, remember how in that meeting you highlighted these yeah. five things? Well, here are the two that we've made
yeah,
progress on.
Yeah.
Here's the one that we're working on and here's yeah. the two that we probably can't do.
Right.
But we want you to know that we heard you.
That's so good.
So yeah, so yeah. I think really looping back, letting people yeah. give those honest comments and then being overt with how you've yeah. been affected by their comments.
I love that. Okay, I want to get back to the three questions. But
yeah.
again, this is part of my role on this podcast is like I hear
Alex
all these interesting things.
Question asker.
And I'm like, nice. I want to know more about that. So all of the process that you just unpacked
yeah.
requires a certain inner life on your behalf.
Yeah, it's probably true.
Because like you said, with parenting, if you're going to ask the question, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
Or what can I do better? And you said, you can't be defensive. But yeah. that requires something.
You have to be
yeah.
prepared
to
for that.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't ask that on a day after you've
right,
done the interviews.
Yeah.
Or you think
yeah.
you're a bad parent
or you've
already.
Had a big fight with
yeah.
your young person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes I see that. It's the right question at the wrong time
yeah.
can mm-hmm. actually do more damage to the relationship than good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't have to go all in depth, but I am curious if you could give us a few pointers about cultivating enough of an inner life to receive
yeah.
the answers from the questions, even if you don't like the answers yeah. that are given mm-hmm. to you.
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to mind is my favorite text in scripture. Mm-hmm. And that is John 15,
mm-hmm.
where Jesus talks about it's our abiding.
Mm-hmm.
in him that enables us to have fruit. Mm. And I have tried enough in my life to do things on my own and hope fruit will come. And I know how futile and frustrating that is. Mm. And so, so I do try to spend time with the Lord every morning. Mm-hmm. I'm a morning person, mm-hmm. so that works pretty well. I've actually just started something about a month ago. I got this idea from one of our donors. It's getting harder for me to have quality morning time. Yeah. When and take kids to school and do email. You know, I have about 50 emails waiting for me from 9 p.m. You know, when I wake up, if I start email at 6:30 a.m., I have 50 new emails because we have a lot of team that works east.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've been working for 3 hours. So time in the morning is really important to me, but I've actually started carving out like an hour on the weekends and made that more my extended time of praying, reading scripture, reading kind of reflective books. This morning I read something about balance and how to find that or not find that. And so I'm finding like that larger dose on the weekends helps me be more sustained by kind of the smaller doses Monday through Friday of time I get with God. So that is a real priority for me. I mean, different people connect with God different ways, but for me, it is prayer and Bible in the morning. I mean, I'm kind of a traditional evangelical girl from 1980s youth group, really. And so that's what we started. Yeah, sure. I started that in 11th grade, and that's been really life-giving for me.
That's so awesome. Thank you for my roundabout question. I just kept thinking about how important it is for the moment when you ask the question to be able to like receive the answer in a humble way.
Totally.
Because I can think of all the times when I didn't.
When
I wasn't ready to hear that.
Yeah. And you do more damage to the relationship.
That's my point.
I mean, it's kind of like an attorney says, don't ask a question if you're not ready for the answer, like in court. Yeah. It's the same kind of thing. Like, so I'm not, I shouldn't be asking what would you do differently about my parenting if I'm not ready to hear it. Yeah, so that's a really good point.
That's good.
One of the things that I found interesting about reading some of your work, because I'm like the nerd, so I read the three big questions and then I was like, and now I'm going to start growing with, and I'm just going to keep going backwards until I go. But I actually found that interesting because you talk in Growing With a lot about this idea of like emerging adulthood and how kind of the traditional markers for what it looks like to become a child, to go to adulthood have kind of changed and moved around. I'm curious, as somebody who works with churches and has kind of seen a lot of different churches and how they do things, what is the church doing well to support people kind of in that? If you want to define emerging adulthood, that'd probably be good too, because I just realized that's a term we don't always use. But how are churches supporting that well? And what are some things that churches maybe are doing to inadvertently make that period of time more difficult?
Yeah. Great question. So
it's a very long one. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
Ashley asked like 8 questions in one.
My questions are usually 4 questions. So there
that's
you
nice.
Go.
Nice. We'll try to parse them out one at a time here. So, emerging adult is a term coined by Jeffrey Arnett. And I mean, shorthand is it's kind of college students and young adults. So think kind of 18 to 29 or so. And what's fascinating in U.S. culture and cultures, I should say, and if you look at data, census data including, we are getting 20-somethings are getting married 5 years later, having babies 5 years later. And so I think churches have often had the mentality of there's a youth ministry and then there's a college ministry and then there's a young marrieds ministry. And, you know, the average age of marriage is something like 28 for males, 26 for females last time I checked in the U.S. And so there's a big gap between 22 and 26, 28. And so thoughtful churches are saying, we need a more nuanced understanding of what our people are going through. And we might still have a college ministry, especially if we're located near a college. And then we need kind of a young adult person who might have some young marriage responsibilities, but is really helping us listen to and serve kind of that 22-year-old beyond. In fact, I think your young adults pastor here, who I just met.
Lane.
He's up to age 26. Is that what he said?
Yes. He kind of keeps extending it as he gets older.
42. So. He's in charge of everybody up to 42.
It's an unofficial handoff at some point between young adult and the full adult life of the church.
And I think that's okay to have that be a little bit fuzzy. And, you know, to let the church kind of look at who are its people. and what is happening to them, and when do we want to encourage them to make that transition? So I think some of the mistakes churches make are not really factoring in or thinking about that 22 to 26, 28-year-old who's likely single and doesn't just want youth group 2.0. So I think that's one of the other mistakes we think. That, you know, college and young adults, they just want, you know, the same kind of thing, but we'll have quieter music and it'll be more contemplative. No.
Less chubby bunny.
Less chubby bunny. Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of the things
That's a really good way of putting it, by the way. More,
just more guitar. less bright lights and more guitar.
That's funny.
And, you know, part of what I think is so awesome, well, about all young people, but especially that 18 to 29, is they're so very capable and they have so much agency. When it comes to the three big questions, identity, belonging, purpose, like their sense of purpose and the possibilities they have to really be used by God in significant ways are remarkable. So, you know, I think that would be a question I would have for your church is what are you doing to really listen to and raise up leaders who are that 18 to 29? And, you know, some churches are having them serve on boards or having them get training so that they'll eventually be ready to serve on boards. And just looking at every part of the church and saying, okay, how could we involve maybe a teenager, but maybe an 18 to 29 year old in every aspect of ministry that we're doing. So, so that would be something else that I'd recommend for churches. Cool.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening today. We were glad you decided to join in. If you are interested in Kara Powell and her work, you can actually check out her website, which we will have in the show notes, but it is just karapowell.com. If you want to learn more about her books and some of the curriculum that she's released, you can also listen to other podcasts she's been on, as well as read some blogs that she's written. You can also check out the Fuller Youth Institute is where she works, and their website, again, this will be in the show notes, but it is, not surprisingly, fulleryouthinstitute.org. So if you want to know more, those are two great places to start. Make sure that you tune in with us next week because we'll have the second part of this conversation and dig a little bit more into the big three questions that impact every person, but specifically teenagers. So we're excited for that. If you want to make sure that you do not miss that conversation, you can make sure you're subscribed to our podcast on iTunes or on Spotify. We additionally, if you're having trouble finding us in either of those places, we have links for that as well. We're trying to take really good care of you on that front. And don't forget, if you subscribe, you not only get this podcast on Tuesdays, but you also get the weekly liturgy on Thursdays and our weekly teaching on Mondays. See you guys next week.